This was my first time going, and I was extremely thrilled with everything that was provided, from the materials to being able to meet the speakers and authors of books.
Ben from Green Bay, Wisconsin, talking about the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Thank you for putting on the conference and providing the educational material that we can use in our world today.
Learn more about our fall Making the Case conference at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our first impulse, especially in the face of grief, that is, mourning the loss of a loved one, is to speak the gospel. And that is a very, very good impulse, especially so when that grief is compounded by the fact that this loss of life has come either in miscarriage or in infancy. Those kind of helpless feelings where life is barely begun, where at least from the outside looking in, we might say they didn't even get a chance to live, even though they lived and they died so soon. The gospel is a great impulse. Is it also sometimes necessary in the midst of grief to hear the law? We're going to be talking about consoling someone suffering from miscarriage or infant loss. Joining us on this Monday afternoon, Deaconess Catherine Ziegler-Weber, editor of the Issues Etc., Book of the Month for September, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage. She joins us from Argentina. Deaconess, welcome.
Thank you.
I think our first, and it's often a very good impulse, when we encounter and want to comfort someone in the face of miscarriage or infant loss, is, in terms of law and gospel, to simply speak the gospel. But you say there are times when someone in that position of grief also needs to hear the law. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think, having experienced a miscarriage myself, I think we often can get stuck in a slump of grief and sorrow. And we often place ourselves as victims at times, at least in my instance. I think in my situation, I put myself as a victim. And I started to feel that people weren't understanding my situation. People weren't being merciful enough to me. I didn't think that they were showing me enough gospel in a place where I felt pretty weighted by the law. And in reality, I think what was going on with me was I was failing to see where the gospel had been spoken over me, where I had received gospel, where I had received forgiveness and mercy. And I think there was also an element of I was judging a lot of people because of my own grief as people who didn't understand the gospel. And I think when we start to do that, we fail to understand what the gospel really means for our lives and what it means for us in every situation of our life. For me, in the midst of a miscarriage, what the gospel meant was that I needed to forgive too. I needed to forgive others because it's not chartered territory for a lot of people. It's difficult. It's challenging. Not just for the person going through the grief, but for others to know how to interact and be a part of another person's grief. But really at the heart of it all is Christ and what he's done for us. And I think one of the things I wanted to focus on with the chapter on forgiveness specifically was that women can be unified in a tragic event in their lives, such as a miscarriage. But as Christians, we have a more significant death that unifies us, and that's what we have to cling to, is the cross. And if you can't look at the cross in the midst of your miscarriage, you're going to get into that slump of grief, and you're going to fail to be able to be gracious and merciful to those at a point in your life when you might think that you might be the one who needs more grace and mercy shown to them.
So tell us your story, your experience with miscarriage.
My experience as is the case with most women, I think, is unique. Each, I think, person who experiences miscarriages has elements, factors that are different. Probably one of the most significant differences in my experience was that I was in a foreign country and I was under a socialized healthcare system. And so I was a newlywed to a pastor. I am a newlywed still. I would consider myself a newlywed still. So there was a lot of pressure and excitement to have kids, and we didn't know what that journey held, what that entailed. So first time we got pregnant, as with most couples, you get really excited, and you're dreaming before your feet even hit the ground of what that new life is going to be like. And it came crashing down pretty quickly for us, especially with the healthcare system here in Argentina. It's not the best healthcare because it's free. I mean, you pay for it with your tax dollars. So there's a lack of vocation, I would say, among healthcare workers here. And when you go, you just become nothing more than a number to them to get through the system. So I was handled quite roughly. It was a new cultural experience for me of waiting clinics at hospitals for results, for answers, for what was going on with my body. I knew that I was pregnant, but I didn't know what that meant. I wrote about it in depth in the book, Never Forsaken. But basically what ended up happening was I just had a miscarriage. And to top it off, I had a miscarriage while I was in another city that was quite far away from our home. And we were at my sister-in-law's, well, we were at my husband's hometown. And we were there for the baptism of his nephew and our godson. And so a lot of his family was asking, you know, when I was going to have a baby, when we were going to have our own family. And here I was dealing with a miscarriage. So on top of healthcare providers and family, now I had the family of my husband, that I had to learn to be gracious with them in that process. And then when we came home to my husband's town where he serves as a pastor, there were members who were asking about, they were very involved in our lives, and they knew we had been going to the doctor. They knew we had been trying to have kids. They didn't know everything that had gone on. But when I told them that I had lost the child, a lot of them had not the most kind things to say, not the most sensitive things to say. And so I also had to learn to forgive church members. And I had to learn to heavily lean upon the grace of God and upon Christ and his forgiveness to know, well, to continue to be family with my husband's family, with the church family, to be able to continue healing, I would say, from a miscarriage. So my experience of miscarriage was heavily inundated with a need to forgive others, especially to be able to move forward with healing. So I would say that my experience was very unique from that aspect, and very much having to deal with forgiving others in that process.
You talk about reckless comments. They are often very well intended, and they're intended to, in many cases, to offer some kind of comfort in the case of a miscarriage, but you say they can be hurtful, thus the need for that kind of attitude of forgiveness. What kind of comments are you talking about?
Oh, I've heard a lot of different examples of comments from people, not just from my own experience, but from other women who also contributed to the book. For me personally, they were comments like, oh, well, at least you weren't that far along, or at least you didn't have to have a DNC. Or there were comments like, oh, well, better luck next time, you know. So there are times where people, or a classic one in Latin America is, well, God knows best. And while those are well-meaning comments and well-intended, they hit at the core of a woman who has just had a miscarriage, because that's not all there is to it for them. To be able to say, well, God knows best, well, that's just, a lot of times it just feels like slapping a Band-Aid on a sore subject or a bleeding wound. And a lot of times those comments, they don't help in the situation. But knowing that you are going to get those kinds of comments and knowing that people mean well, and just being able to say, bless their heart, helps in the healing process as well. Because people in general, we all do it. We have all done it. I know I personally, I was reflecting on some of my friends who had had miscarriages before I had had my own. And I know I didn't handle it well. I know I probably maybe just brushed it off or said, oh, I'm really sorry for your loss. But like I said before, it's uncharted territory for a lot of people, and maintaining a disposition of forgiveness really helps for you and know that it's not about having the right words in the right moment. And expecting people to have that is a false expectation. Expecting people to know what to say, when to say it, and to say the right thing, you would never expect that of anybody. At least we shouldn't. Because the gospel that we do need to hear and that we do need to cling to and to know has already been spoken over us, and we need to be reminded of that. And so when somebody fails in that area, we need to be able to speak the same gospel to them that we ourselves need to hear in moments of grief and trial and suffering.
We're talking about consoling someone suffering from miscarriage or infant loss. Deaconess Catherine Ziegler-Weber is our guest, editor of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage. When we come back, she also says that a lack of words can sometimes be harmful. We'll find out what she means by that. LCMS Life Ministry is devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and in the culture at large. Check out their free pro-life resources at lcms.org/life. Advocating for the unborn, weak, and vulnerable, LCMS Life Ministry, lcms.org/life.
No one wants his or her life to end meaninglessly, and that is certainly what happens if there is no life after death or final judgment.
International human rights attorney Dr. John Warwick Montgomery talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Religions other than Christianity provide no assurance in this regard. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is at the very heart of Christianity, and is the most compelling reason to believe the claims of Christ to be God come to earth for the salvation of mankind. The evidence for the resurrection is so powerful that it would stand up in any court of law.
You can meet and hear Dr. John Warwick Montgomery making a legal case for the resurrection of Christ at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about consoling someone suffering from miscarriage or infant loss. Deaconess Catherine Ziegler-Weber is our guest. Deaconess, before the break, we were talking about the kinds of sometimes thoughtless, sometimes very well-intentioned responses to the grief after miscarriage that can be harmful. But you also say that a lack of words can also be harmful. What do you mean?
I know that in my own personal experience, sometimes when people don't say something or they don't go with you on your journey of grief, or if you share with them, for example, that you had a miscarriage or that you're grieving with that, and they don't ask more or they remain silent, it can be taken as indifference. And that can be hard as well because, for example, if your spouse, often I think men tend to remain silent for fear of saying the wrong thing, and they try to tread carefully. I think in those moments it can be hard because when someone's silent, it's easy to incorporate what you think they might be saying in that silence, when in reality, they just don't know what to say. And I think in reality, often, speaking not for women in general, but for myself as a woman, I know that at times when my husband is silent or when other people are silent, I'm trying to fill in the blanks of that silence with what they probably are thinking, what they might be thinking, or what's going on in their head. And that often makes the problem a lot worse than what it really is, because sometimes it's not all about the negative. It's not all bad. It's not, and sometimes it's just they don't know what to say. And so being able to be in silence at times, you have to learn to deal with that and to forgive when people are silent, where you would rather have them speak to your pain or speak to your suffering, and just be understanding of that. Just as some people might not understand your grief, you might not understand how or why they respond to your grief in the way in which they do.
You also say that grief can, and I think you alluded to this a little earlier, grief can make us selfish at times. Talk a little bit about that.
I know in my own personal experience, I became very selfish with my grief. I wanted to stop with everything, to stop with doing my daily chores, doing my daily tasks, and I wanted everyone around me to even acknowledge that I was grieving, that I was suffering, that I was dealing with something very personal. I wanted birth announcements to stop. I wanted answers from God. I wanted family members, like I said, and just everyone around me to cater to me, to give me what I wanted and what I felt I needed most in my grief. And I was very frustrated because I wanted my husband's congregation even to realize that I was in pain and I needed my husband. So my husband couldn't tend to their needs. He needed to tend to mine. And so I would say I became very selfish. And I think that's a very easy place to slip into when you're grieving, is to demand of others what is unreasonable, I would say.
So let's talk about it then in a slightly more abstract way, too, but these are important points to make. How important is it for us to realize that this forgiveness that is necessary on all sides here, but especially the need in the midst of grief to forgive those who may speak thoughtlessly or not have anything to say, or you say even forgiving the medical personnel who were not as kind and compassionate as they certainly could have been. You say that that forgiveness must begin with God. What does that mean?
I think that becomes essential and important for our daily lives because we have to find that foundation at the cross. If we're seeking to give and receive forgiveness from ourselves, I don't think we realize how weak that forgiveness on its own is. As a pastor's wife, I've realized that there are lots of things that can get under your skin and can really eat at you. And you really have to learn to see Christ in your neighbor and to know that Christ came and died not just for you, but for your neighbor, and that is the life of a Christian is found and in that forgiveness that we share with one another. And it's daily lived out, and it's in the nitty-gritty of life. And so when those
empty comments, or I don't know how else to describe it, the comments that lack compassion at times, or that are somewhat thoughtless, that are given in consolation, you have to know that it's not so easy to just reach within yourself and just forgive a person. That's not the solid foundation upon which we give and receive forgiveness. We've been given forgiveness, therefore we're able to forgive, and that comes specifically from Christ. And that's the beauty of it in so many ways, is because when you're sitting there and thinking, well, I just don't know if I can forgive them, that's okay, because Christ has, and Christ will continue to forgive all sinners and yourself, and just being able to rest upon his forgiveness first and foremost helps build that solid foundation for moving forward with not just healing as someone who's grieving from a miscarriage, but also just continuing to be able to live life together in fellowship with your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ.
You also say that Christ himself shows us how to forgive. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, and while we were yet sinners, Christ came and died for us. He didn't wait for us to come and ask for forgiveness, or to say, hey, Christ, I need some kind of forgiveness. Would you die for me? No, he had the plan for forgiveness already established. And so Christ doesn't wait for us to turn to him. He comes to us. He came and he forgave us first. And so waiting for your neighbor to realize that, you know, maybe I said something inappropriately, or to realize, you know, my words weren't the most well thought out, or to realize, you know, you were going through a very difficult time, I wish I had been more helpful, that may never come. And so being able to depend upon Christ's forgiveness before your neighbor even comes to you, or without your neighbor even coming to you, becomes essential towards the life of a Christian. Just being able to freely give forgiveness to others as Christ freely forgave us, and before anyone asks for forgiveness, being able to freely give that to your neighbor as well.
In the midst of that grief, does that forgiveness also aid in the healing that is necessary after a loss of a child, either as an infant or through miscarriage?
I think the forgiveness definitely aids in the healing of the loss of a child, because when you're grieving, you're constantly looking to blame someone. You're constantly looking for answers and reasons for why you lost the child. If there's not a medical reason, maybe there's some other reason, or maybe there's family members you can blame. And unless you can look to the cross of Christ and know that you have been forgiven and that you have new life in him, and that because of that new life, you will be reunited in heaven with all the saints who have gone before us and with Christ, I think when you look to the cross of Christ and you see the forgiveness that you have been given, you are able to also remember that the forgiveness that you have been given has also been given to all those who have hurt you in the process and those who you've encountered in the process. But all of that combined also unifies you to Christ. Your fellowship with Christ through that forgiveness of sins also then brings you back to what it is that we ultimately hope for. We hope for that eternal life in Christ. That's the hope we cling to. But we need that forgiveness. And that's what we need most essentially before we can even get to that point of a hopeful reunion in heaven.
Finally then, what would you say to a woman in particular, or even to a couple, a husband and wife, who have suffered the loss of miscarriage or infant loss?
It's always hard to know what to say, but my first reaction and first response to those people is, my heart breaks for you. I'm so sorry. And if there's anything we can do for you, let us know. Generally, it's better just to offer, you know, whatever you can offer, a meal or something like that. But just in words, it's always hard to know what to say. it's mostly what a family needs to hear is, I'm just so sorry for your loss, and you'll be in our prayers. And then actions help too, you know, being able to provide a meal for the family, being present, remembering the name of the child, saying the name of their child, if they had a name, and just being present for the family. But as far as words go, I would just say, I'm so sorry, and my heart breaks for you, and you're in my prayers.
Deaconess Catherine Ziegler-Weber is editor of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage. You can find this book at our website, issuesetc.org. It's on every page. You can also call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and order Never Forsaken, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Deaconess, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
In Hour 2 of Issues Etc. on this Labor Day, we are going to be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary. Dr. Carl Fekencher will be our guest. We'll be talking about the gospel reading, where Jesus heals a Syrophoenician woman and a deaf man. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.